Welcome to Mystical Dispute, the Limited Magic the Gathering debate podcast. I'm Garrett Gardner, a.k.a. G-Guards.
And I'm Carl Chase, a.k.a. Two Duck Cubed.
Huge thanks to our patrons. Check out our monthly bonus mini-episodes by supporting us on patreon.com/mysticaldispute. And today, we're going to debate the tricks of Dominaria United.
Garrett, at long last, you finally shared with me that you've trophied twice in a row, which is great to hear because, man, our DM conversations were getting a little bit negative there for a while. I'm literally always negative. I could win like 20 games in a row and I lose one game and I'm like, f*** everything.
Yeah, that's default.
And for you, I mean, you're much more reasonable, but when you are losing as much as you've been losing, but you're winning more now. That's great. We're on the right track. We're moving forward.
Listen, when you're on a losing bend, you have a bit of an existential crisis, but I'm back, you know, because I trophied twice. I do have to say, like, I'm a little bit more down on the format than I was at the beginning, although I still stand by my conviction that every Magic format is fun by default.
Limited Magic is great, except for Crimson Vow, but no, I like that too, just not as much as the others. Anyway,
let's move on.
In this corner,
opening takes.
Carl, it's funny, we did a tricks episode for Streets of New Capenna, and the tricks in that format were very good, very format defining, but somehow Dominar United feels like they're even more format warping than even in Streets.
I agree, Garrett. The tricks in this set are really, really good, but I also think that they're even a little bit more tricky, shall I say, to play with.
God.
I'm sorry to everybody that has to listen to that. So while they're very powerful, I think they just add a ton of dynamic gameplay. I'm really enjoying the environment that it creates.
And I guess, Carl, that's where I disagree, because I find these super powerful instant speed effects that can warp games out of nowhere to be a little bit frustrating and to be dampening my experience. Let's talk about this a little bit in
debate it.
So Carl, one of my feelings about this format is how quote unquote swingy it can feel. That term gets thrown around a lot. So let me define it in my own context, which is to say people can win games out of absolutely nowhere. It can feel like you are strongly in the lead and then all of a sudden you get run over by a trample trick and +5/+5 or something like that out of nowhere. And I feel like a huge contributor to that is these very powerful game altering tricks.
It's hard to deny that the tricks could completely warp games. Gaia's Might in particular, at one mana for potentially +5/+5, allows for some pretty big turns. It can be combined with Colossal Growth. It can be combined with Twin Inferno. You could just be combined with other Gaia's Mites. Three Gaia's Mites can deal 15 damage, for example. And I do think that you can make the call that that could be somewhat intimidating for newer players. It could be somewhat intimidating for players that don't play Limited nearly as much. Maybe they're more balanced between Limited and Constructed. But for the person that wants as complex and dynamic, and I'll say like just a game that has a lot of probability trees, has a lot of really tough decisions on strategy, on whether you're going to be sending in or holding back or keeping mana open or keeping not mana open, ordering, sometimes you have multiple tricks, ordering on tricks, like there's a lot there. And because they put so much pressure on the game state, they put so much pressure in your life total potentially, or they offer to maybe alter the course of the game with a card like Take Up the Shield, it forces you to have a ton of your mental energy around them, like it or not. And I like that.
Sure.
I honestly respect just as much, if not even more, the other opinion of like maybe it's too much. Maybe there's too much of that, but it's just a big part of the format.
Yeah, it's undeniably a huge part of the format. I think we're in agreement there. And I also think that I'm in the minority by being down on this format in any way. I feel like it's gotten one of the more positive receptions of any recent format. And I'm kind of scratching my head about that a little bit. There are a lot of things I like about it, but you say, you know, there's a lot of decisions to be made, but one of the positions in a lot of games that I have not found very rewarding is if they have Shore Up here, I just lose. Or if they have Gaia's Might here, there's no block I can make to survive. There's nothing I can do on my turn to fix that. If they have Colossal Growth, they're just going to kill me. And just knowing that it's almost like this curse of knowledge. As a player that I consider myself pretty skilled, right? I know that they could have these instant speed tricks, but a lot of the time you can't do anything about it. So, you'd have to make your play anyway. And it's a difficult decision that I don't find super rewarding when I get it wrong, especially, which I have done a little bit more of than usual lately.
So Garrett, my tactful response to that would be get good.
Right when I took a drink of water, you just lay that on me. Yeah, all right.
Literally made Garrett do a spit take there. jokes aside, I mean, of course, yeah, you're going to get into spots where, hey, I can't beat Colossal Growth.
Absolutely.
I mean, honestly, Take Up the Shield is very much a card there. Like, when you're swinging out, for example, I beat all cards not named Take Up the Shield. Should I go for this alpha or not? So, and there's definitely a guessing game that plays into that as well. I mean, it can add some variance in that regard. I mean, it's very skillful to play around them. There's a lot of probability involved, yes. But there's still a big element of variance. Again, if you think there's a 30% chance that they have Take Up the Shield and you win if they don't have it and you lose if they do have it, it's still 70-30 spot there, right? Is it worth it to go for that, or am I more likely to win if I hold back, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, I think that's my hangup is, like, I don't know if it's 70-30. That's what I'm trying to determine, and that's where I'm getting frustrated. Like, it could be 10-90 or something like that. The probability that they do have Take Up the Shield here, it's really difficult to know which tricks my opponent has played and put in their deck and picked. And if I do the play that I feel like is the right play and they do have it or they don't have it or whatever the situation is, I don't know if it was the right play. So I feel like I'm not making progress in knowing that. I mean, I guess this is kind of a general thing with Magic, but it feels particularly prescient when we're talking about these instant speed tricks that if they have it, you lose the game. And if they don't, you win.
Totally agree. I had a spot on stream, they made an attack. I'm not going to go into the specifics of it, but the point of it was relevant, was there was a way for me to survive Colossal Growth if I blocked a particular way.
Right.
And I thought it was actually pretty likely that they had Colossal Growth in that spot based on the way that they played. But as I looked at what would have happened if I survived Colossal Growth, in quotes, I would just have no board and they would have a big board and I'm like 99% going to lose that game anyway. And so I decided not to play around Colossal Growth. And they had Colossal Growth and I lost in the spot. And so, yeah, okay, I lost as opposed to surviving, but that's an interesting decision, right? If I had blocked the way that to survive Colossal Growth, it would have been a suboptimal block if they didn't have it. So by not playing around it, I thought I gave myself the best chance to win. But there's a lot of decisions like that.
And I remember I said in your chat, you played to win, you did not play to survive.
Exactly.
And that is totally a point in your favor. That sort of play separates good players from great players. Knowing that even if you can survive one more turn, there's no chance you can win the game by playing around one of these tricks and then deciding not to and still losing. Picard said it best, right? It's possible to make no mistakes and still lose.
Absolutely.
And that's like a very central tenet of Magic. So now I think I understand why you're enjoying this a little bit more. But then there's the situations where they play Tolarian Terror and they hold up a blue and you have a removal spell you have to pay ward two, and then they just shore up and then the game is just sort of over at that point because now they have a 5/5 and you just wasted your turn in a removal spell. And that's the position that I find myself in enough that it's kind of degraded the format, but not entirely. I'm still enjoying it.
Garrett, again, I would just suggest that you get good and try not to get yourself in those spots. I mean, clearly you don't want to be right, in that spot. Right. You want to be in the other side of that spot. So just my recommendation to you is to try to be on the other end of that situation.
Okay, all right.
Again, jokes aside.
Fair criticism.
I can't guarantee I won't unleash that joke later again in the same podcast. But here's my other big point for why I'm enjoying the great tricks dynamic of Dominaria United is it's a dynamic you really don't get in Constructed. The combat step is a great part of Magic, and Limited is where it shines. And pure and simple, I always want it to be a big part of Limited. I'm not saying that Constructed doesn't have the same level of considerations. They're just very different, and I respect them, and especially playing the Constructed Pro Tour recently, like, I think I realized a whole new level of difficulty that sits in Constructed in different spots and metagaming and et cetera, et cetera. But I love Limited, and I love the combat step, and that that, for me, is one of the big pros about Dominaria United. Is just a super fascinating combat step.
Carl, I think that's all fair. And in response, I play a 2-mana 2/2 and then give it +4/+4, trample and haste, and do Xaxes to you out of nowhere.
Ouch. Good game.
But hey, the format is what it is, right? I can have my preferences or my complaints or whatever it is. I mean, I'm not really trying to like drag this format. I still think it's quite a bit of fun. But regardless of what I think, I also am going to keep playing it. And the only way to get better at this format is to know the tricks by heart. They are so prevalent in how games play out. So we picked four of the most influential tricks, and we're just going to talk about each one in the next four rounds. So let's start with
card one.
First card we want to talk about is Shore Up, which is a blue, untap and +1/+1 and hexproof to a creature. This card is Talarian Terror's best friend, I think, probably, because it both fuels it to make it cheaper, and then once it comes down, it makes it essentially indestructible, I feel like.
It's Talarian Terror's best friend, and there's also a whole host of other creatures that are really good with it. The 2-mana uncommon spells, in particular, Balmor and Wrath.
Absolutely.
And also Electrostatic Infantry, another 2-drop uncommon. Shore Up is really, really, really good with these cards, and can just create these back breaking situations. You could spend a low amount of mana for a highly impactful card and then protect it from 1 mana, and yikes.
And something that I think is true in this format is that because the tricks are so good, the interaction, the removal, and that sort of thing in the format is a little bit more few and far between. And this just blanks any spell that targets your creature and for 1 blue mana. I mean, usually you see this sort of effect. You know, I saw it during preview season and I didn't think it would be that big of a player, but it feels like it's essential for basically any blue deck.
It's essential for most blue decks. I will make a slight point about the fact that it's a type of spell, unlike maybe a Timely Interference or an Impulse, that doesn't go to the yard immediately. So if you're playing a lot of Talarian Terrors, you can't go too crazy on Shore Ups,
yes,
because it's a spell that you want to hold in your hand. So it's great with Talarian Terror because protecting a 5/5 ward too, you know, they've got to spend at least 4 mana to kill your thing at minimum, and then you're protecting it for 1 is insane. But you can't play like 3 Shore Ups in your 3 Talarian Terror deck. That doesn't work. You could play 3 Shore Ups in your triple Electrostatic Infantry deck, though. That would absolutely work. So just thinking about the ordering of spells is relevant with Talarian Terror always. But yeah, you almost always want one of these in your blue decks.
Yes.
Outside of, I think, some pretty extreme circumstances.
And what's really interesting about Shore Up, and I think it's a theme among a lot of these tricks, is that it's got a very low ALSA or average last seen at 6.28. So you should basically always have access to at least one if you're playing blue.
And I think part of the reason that it goes that late is the first one is often better than the second. Though I do think that people are probably misidentifying decks where you could actually play 2 or 3 of them to great success. And again, really for me, the spots where I want to play more than one is when you've got those super powerful 2-drops. And just in general, the less cost and the better your creatures are, the more likely you're going to want to play Shore Up.
The other thing that makes Shore Up very good is that it's got modes. It's not necessarily modular, but obviously it can save your creature from interaction or removal.
And Garrett, maybe what we should really do is just try to succinctly summarize the distinct modes for each of these cards. And so if we're doing that for Shore Up, 1, the most obvious, protect your creature from removal. 2, surprise blocker, untap a tapped creature and eat their attacking creature. And then 3 is just win combat. Obviously, +1/+1 is only +1/+1, so it can't have a situation where like you go from losing the combat to winning the combat. You can only go from even to tie or tie to win for the most part.
All that versatility for 1 blue mana is what makes this card such a defining factor of Dominaria United.
Totally agree.
All right, let's move on to
card 2.
The next card we're going to talk about is Gaia's Might, which is 1 green mana for an instant, +X/+X equal to the number of basic land types you control.
So always +5/+5.
Always +5/+5, as we have discussed before on the pod, Garrett. It always is +5/+5.
You know, I saw this card during preview season, and Giant Growth itself is not a terribly powerful card, and that's where I sort of landed with this card. But, you know, we joke about it being +5/+5, but it's +5/+5 a lot, and it's +4/+4 even more often without a ton of support, and that is a lot for one mana.
I think in preview season, it's hard to understand just the volume of lands that are going to be available in the draft until you kind of start seeing the packs.
Yeah.
But once you see what the opportunity is for the number of non-basic lands you can put in a deck, like, oh yeah, this is, you can get to 3, 4, 5 domain very easily. And, you know, your point about Giant Growth 2 being not that powerful of a card, you reframe it when you think about Lightning Strike versus Lava Axe. Now, not saying Lava Axe is a good card, but you're still spending 5 mana to deal 5 damage for a Lava Axe. You can spend 2 mana to deal 3 damage to face, and both have some viability to some extent. Obviously, Mariah's Outriders is the example here, but 5 is a lot more than 3 in the sense that it is 1/4 of your opponent's life total as opposed to 1/7 of your opponent's life total.
Absolutely. And I remember actually a long time ago hearing some sage advice from former co-host Zach or Zvazda that 1 mana is a lot less than 2 mana. This is the second trick on this list that's only 1 mana that does a ton. And it's just so much easier in limited to hold up 1 versus 2 mana. It's infinitely easier. And so that is really, I think, why guys might shines in this format.
Wait, who is Zach?
Ugh. Anyway, the card's just good, right? I mean, similar to Shore Up, it's got a 7.0 ALSA, meaning it's being taken really late. You can wheel these with ease. And honestly, you could play 3, 4 Guy's Mites, and that can be your game plan. Just play 2-mana 2/2s. And then play Gaia's Mites and a bunch of tap lands, and then you can just Lava Axe their face 4 times.
There's a little bit of awkwardness with Gaia's Might in the sense that you've got to play all these different basic land types and tapped lands for a card that is inherently aggressive. And so there's some conflicting elements of that game plan, but really they're just totally made up by the fact that 1 for 5 is all great. And so you can get away with spending all this time and playing tapped lands and maybe playing creatures even a little bit later than you would, because maybe you play a Nishoba Brawler that's a 5/3 on turn 3 and a Yavimaya Sojourner that's a 4/6 on turn 4, and then you Gaia's Might and play a Mariah's Outrider and they're dead on turn 6. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that you spent all this time and effort to try to get the right lands and spent your entire draft and your game plan to do that, because it's just so, the rate is so much better than what you can do without the domain.
And you mentioned Nishoba Brawler. I think the cards that work the best with the Gaia's Might, and this is probably not that surprising, but they're the cards with trample.
Oh yeah.
Like I said, you can get wins out of nowhere if you just have one teeny little trampler that gets +5/+5 out of nowhere, kills your creature, empties your board, and does, I don't know, 4 or 5 damage to your face. That combination is really format defining.
You look at Yavimaya Iconoclast, Electrostatic Infantry, Nishoba Brawler, all 2 drops that have trample. And you look at Yavimaya Iconoclast and you say, oh, for 3 mana, it becomes a 4/3 in haste, which is great. But really the most important keyword on Yavimaya Iconoclast is trample because of the presence of Gaia's Might. And really same with the Electrostatic Infantry, where yes, that card is going to be best in a blue-red deck where you can play a ton of spells and some shore ups, but you can still play it in a not nearly as spell heavy green red deck if you've got 2 or 3 Gaia's Mites, because the trample is just so powerful.
So the modes on this one are pretty straightforward. Number one is it can be a 1 mana Lava Axe to face, 5 damage out of nowhere.
Yep.
Number two, obviously you can win combat even with your tiniest creatures being blocked by something large. And if that creature happens to have trample, bonus damage.
Kind of looks like number one then. And you kind of get both the wind combat and Lava Axe to face in one fell swoop if your creature has trample there.
And then number three, where you probably don't want to be, but it's still easy to use, you can use it defensively. Again, it's only 1 mana, so it's pretty easy to pass in limited with 1 green mana up. And you can just block and even eat a Talarian Terror with a small creature.
It's also really effectively on defense against tramplers too.
Yeah.
If they're playing Colossal Growths or they're doing the Gaia's Might on a trampler thing themselves, +5/+5 goes a long way to avoiding dying in that situation.
All in all, we've discussed this a lot on the podcast, but it's a lot easier to get domain than it may have initially seemed. So it's a lot easier for this to be a 1 mana +4/+4 or +5/+5. And obviously that's going to be good.
You know, we probably should have remembered the fact that this card won multiple Grand Prix, I believe, in the hands of Raphael Levy. I want to say in back-to-back weeks. It's a powerful card, and it was underrated early, but no longer is it underrated.
Let's move on to the
card 3.
Next card can be an incredible blowout. It's called Take Up the Shield. It's 1 and a white Put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control, and it gains a lifelink until end of turn and indestructible.
I underrated this card, Garrett. I'll admit it. I got a bad habit of overlooking the white tricks recently, and I gotta stop that because, you know, I'm like, two mana for +1/+1. Like, that's not okay. It's just a thing. It's not, it'll be relevant, but it's not gonna be a format defining card. Wrong. The combination of those words, lifelink and indestructible, holy cow, does it do some things.
Yeah, I think it's the lifelink that sets this card apart, because a lot of race situations, a lot of wins out of nowhere. And in this case, you just put this onto a 4/4 or a 5/5, you're gaining 5 or 6 life out of nowhere, saving your creature and just bashing. A lot of the time, it's actually relevant to just put it on your creature when attacking, just to swing the race in your favor, even if you're not trading it with another card. And so that can make this card pretty difficult to play optimally, because sometimes you're giving yourself card disadvantage to give yourself life advantage.
As a 2-mana trick, that guy Zach that you talked about before, I guess he said 2 mana is more than one, and that's very true here. If you're holding up 1 and a white, first of all, you gotta do that. You have to actually hold up the 2 mana. But when you are doing so, I'm finding more and more and more that opponents are really starting to play around take up the shield, because you just have these combat situations. It looks like it's very favorable for the attacker, and then you're like, well, what if they have take up the shield? And you go, oh crap, it goes from being a great attack to a terrible attack just with the presence of that one card.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, the blowout potential for this card and a lot of the other tricks is humongous. I have something to admit though, Carl. I don't think I've played a take up the shield yet in any of my decks. And part of that is because I have barely played white in this format so far. I just sort of tend to soft avoid it. But what's interesting about this card is that I actually think it might be better in non-base white decks, protecting your enormous green or red creatures or your writhing necromasses or something like that, gaining a whole bunch of life, protecting a giant creature. And I can't bring myself to splash for this card.
You need to get over that. It's my most played white only card, because I keep putting it like as the only white card in a non-white deck, and it looks stupid. Like, you look at the screenshot and it looks jarring, right? You're like, it looks like they've got a green red deck splashing blue for a couple of gold cards, and then there's just randomly just a take up the shield in white, and maybe there's like an Urborg Repossession in black. There's one of each of those two colors. You're like, what? Like, what is that? It just, you haven't played Dominaria United Limited before. It just doesn't look right. It offends your sensibilities.
It does offend my sensibilities, but I do feel like that's a point in which I can improve my game, is to put this in my non-white decks. And another point that I think is relevant with this card is that it's probably not at its best in base white decks, because base white decks tend to have much smaller creatures, so that lifelink ends up being a little bit less relevant, and it goes wide, so those individual creatures saving them is not as relevant. So strangely, I think it's just the right way to play this card is to splash for it.
Yeah, the base white decks, a lot of times mana efficiency really matters. You're trying to just get as many bodies in the board as you can. In the go wide decks, right, you're trying to play Argavian Cavalier and Captain's Call. Captain's Call is not an efficient card. 4 mana for 3/1/1 bodies is not terribly efficient, but you use a heroic charge or whatever later and it makes up for that efficiency. But either way, you're just trying to spend all of your mana to just get a bunch of bodies on the board, maybe get into playing the 4/4 as early as you can. So, I mean, it's still going to be good. Like, you should still play it in those white decks.
Right.
You always want to play it in those white decks. It's just like, it shines, I think, in the non-white decks with that game plan a little bit better.
Sure.
So I think this one's got 3 modes as well. The first mode is just like the other tricks we've talked about so far. It's win combat, but I'm going to call it win combat ++, Garrett.
Sure.
Because not only are you, by making your creature indestructible and a little bit bigger, not only can you win a combat that you otherwise wouldn't, but gaining 5 life at the same time can just totally turn around the tides of a game and even protect you from death in certain circumstances. It could be death touch too, which is not something most other combat tricks can do. The second is countering a removal spell. It's not nearly as good as Shore Up is in this case, because Shore Up is both 1 mana and it can counter Tolarian Geyser or Enthrall to the Pit that Take Up the Shield can't, but it can still be very mana efficient. If they cast Extinguish the Light, they spend 4 mana, you spend 2 mana, and you get a plus one counter out of it. And if it's their turn, then maybe they can't attack after that because you've got this giant indestructible lifelink creature. And mode 3 is just this proactive life gain mode where you're attacking, you've got ground creatures, they've got air creatures, and so you're just kind of attacking past each other. But just giving your creature plus one, making it a little bigger, and gaining 4 or 5 life can swing a race. And so it's not the mode you're going to use most often, and I'm going to give you a bonus trick here for a super secret mode, which is you cast your Moriah's Outrider, you hold full control, and in response to the Moriah's Outrider trigger, you cast Take Up the Shield on your Moriah's Outrider to gain 5 while you're dealing 5 damage, because again, it's always going to be 5.
Of course, it's always 5.
Especially if you have 7 mana to use, it's always 5. It's not going to come up often, but it might steal you one game out of nowhere that otherwise, you know, it just wouldn't work.
I want to see screenshots of that one for sure.
I mean, you probably shouldn't do it because it's usually going to be better when they're attacking anyway into you in your Moriah's Outrider. But if you think they've got Bounce, for example, it can work in that spot.
All in all, this is not a card that I expected to perform very well at all. And it feels like a game warping moment whenever it gets played. So watch out for it. And also, really, splash for it.
Should we go on to the final card, Garrett?
Let's do it.
Card 4.
The last of the tricks we're going to discuss is Colossal Growth. 1 and a green instant with kicker for a red. Target creature gets +3/+3 until end of turn, and if it was kicked, it gets +4/+4 instead and gains trample and haste until end of turn. And this, of all of them, is really the one that stands out to me as stealing games out of nowhere. You play this card for 3 mana on even just a 2/2, and you've just constructed yourself a 6/6 trampling haste threat. That's huge.
You pair that with the fact that you've got a lot of ways to make a very big creature via other methods. Territorial Morrow can be an 8/8 or a 10/10. Any creature where you've already cast Gaia's Might on it is going to be enormous.
Sojourner can be a 3-mana 4/6 that becomes an 8/10 trample haste.
Yeah, exactly. You just the fact there's all these 4 and 5 power creatures as well with the common cost reducing cycle.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of beef, and anytime you've got 8 plus power of trample barreling down at you, it is the defining moment in that game.
Yeah, another card that I certainly would not have thought was so good, but I think the key word on this card and the most important part of it, Carl, is the trample.
Yeah, it wouldn't be playable if it didn't have that word on the card. Like, if it just gave haste and +4/+4, I don't think this is a good enough card.
Yeah.
Plain and simple.
I mean, then it turns into sort of a strange removal spell in some cases, but the trample just means that it doesn't matter what's on your side of the board, you're going to take some damage that turn, and the game could just be over, or the race could just swing in your opponent's favor too much for you to overcome that.
Garrett, this is another card you can pick up late. It's got an ALSA of 7.37, and again, just that's how late you can typically pick it up. So by the 7.3 pick on average, you can get this card in draft. That means it's going to table and wheel a lot. So if you're a deck that wants Colossal Growth, you don't necessarily have to prioritize it in the first or second picks. You can try to pick it up later in the draft.
And that's how I think people can just end up with like 3 or 4 of these and just a very low curve and just beat down. That's how I think a lot of these gruel-based beatdown decks. I wonder how close in power level it can be to the Gaia's Might, especially if you don't get those dual lands to make Gaia's Might particularly good. Like, I think this card can sometimes be a more important player in that deck.
Yeah, that's a great point. And thinking about how much your deck wants Colossal Growth versus how much it wants Gaia's Might, it's, you know, certainly your access to basic land types is a big part of that, but it's not the only thing. The more early trample you have, like we talked about in the Gaia's Might section, the more you're going to want Gaia's Might. But the more beef you have, especially if it's not trample, the more you're going to want Colossal Growth.
Yeah.
It pairs with cards you don't necessarily think about either, like Withering Necromass, for example, as a 5/5 Death Toucher. The interaction between trample and Death Touch is crazy. If you cast it on a Necromass and they're just blocking with one creature, you're going to guarantee that you're going to barrel through for 8 points. And even if they know that it's coming, but they only have creatures, they can't really stop it, because each other creature you put in front of a Trampling Death Toucher just prevents one more damage. That's it.
Yeah, in general, I think that the cycle of cost reduces giant creatures is what makes this card shine. Just big, beefy, not necessarily trampling threats barreling down out of nowhere with trample. It's just how a lot of games end. But the one thing against it, right? We talked about how two is more than one. And really, you don't want to be casting this card very often for two mana. Then it's just a two mana +3/+3. So this card is actually most of the time three mana +4/+4. And that's a lot more than once. So this card ends up being a lot less versatile than the other cards, but it does have one purpose and it shines in that purpose, I think.
Yeah, and the three mana is relevant. You take a card like Rootwalla, Sun Basking Rootwalla, Sun Bathing Rootwalla. It's doing something in the sun. And you know, you say, all right, if I want to make the Rootwalla big, I got to spend four mana. And then if I want to give it trample, I got to spend another three mana. And you say, well, how often is that interaction going to be relevant? And while seven mana is a lot, 10 or 11 trample is also something to deal with at any stage in the game, and you're also playing two cards where you could just make a 2-2 a 5-5, so there's a lot of versatility in that pairing as well, but three is a lot more than one.
And Carl, I can see by the look on your face that you don't want me to do the modes here. I can see you desperately want to talk about your pet card, so I'm going to hand it over to you to talk about the modes on Colossal Growth.
This is so my pet card, Garrett. And really, it is the pet card because of the modes. So even though I've done two of the modes and you've done one of the mode, you were going to have to pry this one out of my cold, dead hands. All right. I love cards that don't have obvious modes. They have so many different ways you can use them, like, and thinking about those dynamics. I love it. I love it so much. We talked about it at the beginning of the episode. It's my baby. So here's the four modes on Colossal Growth. And I'm going to give you the first two are by far the most relevant, but all four are relevant. Mode one, trample over and kill opponent. Obviously, right? But not always as obvious as you might think. Mode two is win combat. And I'm making a big distinction between those two. When I say trample over, I'm talking about making your 6/6 that's being blocked by a 1/1 a 10/10 and dealing 9 damage. That's very different from making your 3/3 a 7/7 to beat their 6/6 or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Those are very functionally different situations. In one, you're trying to deal as much damage to your opponent as possible. In the other, you're trying to create the best combat situation for yourself that you can. One's essentially a tempo mode, one's a value mode to some extent. And before I get to the other two modes, the most important thing when playing this card is figure out which mode you want this card to serve. And of course, you could have a general idea and then make a different call in the moment of a combat situation. But you should have an idea of whether you want to be winning combat or trampling over to end the game. You know, it can change over the course of the game. Magic's dynamic, but I think that's the main thought you need to have in your head. Mode three is save a creature. It's not nearly as good as Gaia's Might. It's way worse than Shore Up and Take Up the Shield in this capacity. But sometimes they cast a lightning strike and you need to save your creature, and you can do so for two mana. The final mode is give your creature haste, and I finally had someone play this mode against me for the first time in like 800 games, Garrett, just the other day. So I think this mode is criminally underused. I think people forget the fact that it gives haste. They want to use it in combat, and certainly it's clunky, right? You got to spend the mana for a creature, then you got to spend three mana. It's a lot of mana to give a creature haste, but don't forget that it exists. I think people forget that this mode exists all the time. To your point, spend three mana on Yavimaya Sojourner, make it an 8/10, trample over for the win is a very relevant mode to consider. The joke that I made is you can turn your Vine Shaper Prodigy into Vornklex.
It's funny that you say that, Carl, because that last mode that you say you've never really seen, giving a creature haste and +4/+4 out of nowhere, I think I've died to that like half a dozen times so far in this format. So it really goes to show how this variance in experiences can really affect different players in different ways.
I played 8 times as many games as you, and you've had it happen to you 6 versus my 1, which is a 48x rate of that happening to us in this format. So, you know, again, the only response that I can have is get good and don't put yourself in situations where it's relevant. My gosh, Garrett, come on.
I'll get better at blocking haste creatures. But seriously, the fifth mode on this card is make Garrett throw his keyboard out the window. all right, let's wrap this up in
closing arguments.
Before we wrap up, there's a couple more tricks in this format, but I don't think they're nearly as impactful in the format as these four. But these four, I really want to underline, I think are huge players in almost all games of this format. Maybe more than any limited format that I can think of in recent history, these tricks are game-defining moments.
They are, and I think a super high percentage of the games in this format are going to have one of these four cards in them.
Yeah.
You've got four great cards that do four very different things. You go through the modes we talked about for each of these four cards, and there's all some elements of the same things, right? Each one has a win combat mode, and each can save a creature to some extent. They do it in very different ways at different degrees of effectiveness, but you do have four cards that play super differently, and understanding the likelihood that your opponent's deck could have card A versus card B versus C versus D, the likelihood they have it in that situation, and even if they do, even if you're pretty sure they've got one, it's not always obvious how to play around it the best either, especially with like Take Up the Shield, for example, can be really tough to play around that card. So it adds a lot of texture. You got to know what they are. If you want to maximize your win rate, really hunkering down and thinking about these cards is one of the best ways to do it.
And you know, in this format, as I said, I don't think this is my favorite limited gameplay playing with and around these tricks, but in a way, it's also pretty rewarding to exit my comfort zone and really hone skills that I don't tend to use in other formats. And I think that this format is kind of a level up for me because of that.
Garrett, I think that's really important. I do just want to confirm something though about what you just said. You said these kinds of powerful tricks aren't necessarily fully in your wheelhouse. I would also like to point out that going back on record, you like 2-mana 2/2s. So just to confirm, you want your 2-mana 2/2s to stay 2-mana 2/2s and not get any bigger ever? Is that, do I have that right?
I just want to curve out, Carl. Leave me alone. That about wraps it up. All right, so thanks for listening to Mystical Dispute. You can support the show at patreon.com/mysticaldispute. I'm Garrett Gardner. You can find me at twitch.tv/gguards.
And I'm Carl Chase. You can find me at twitch.tv/2duckcubed.
Shout out to 17 Lands as always. You can support them on Patreon as well. Until next time, stay chill.
Adios. So, like, you can see why I felt bad, because you actually made, like, this really, like, heartwarming point about getting outside of your comfort zone, and then I just bash you for Tavern Swindler petty jokes. That was my pause. I was like, oh, crap, should I not go this route? Fuck it, I can't help myself. I'm sorry.